Hello, everybody, and welcome to a very special edition of the Far From Vesuvius podcast. My name is Ken, and joining me, as always, is Rafa Rispo. Rafa, what's up, man?
Oh, not too much. Early in the morning here in New York, and it's a nice hot one. So we're getting ready for the day today and excited for the show.
Yeah, it's a hot one here too, man. It's a hot one here in Boston.
Yeah, sure.
And joining us today is a very special guest. I think a lot of us Napoli fans have read our guest's book and are just, you know, I know John has spoken on podcasts before, but we are really, really, really appreciative for his time. So, John Ludden, how you doing, man?
Good afternoon, Ken. Good afternoon, Raf. Oh, good morning. I should say where you guys are. nice to know you've got good weather because it's just starting to rain here, lads.
Yeah, it's the sun's out here. It's just hot. It's hot. You know, we're in those dog days of summer, so I'm not going to complain because it's better than snow. So
absolutely.
But you know, I just want to say right at the open here that we really appreciate your time, and this is fun to be a part of. So thank you so much.
My pleasure, lads. My pleasure.
So I mean, just to kick it off the bat here, I mean, for those of you who don't know, and maybe I'm sure some people who are listening might not know, John had penned a book called Once Upon a Time in Naples about Diego Maradona and his time in Naples. And I mean, for me, in the last 5 or 6 years, it's been one of my favorite books to read. It's up there with Carlo Ancelotti's book and a couple other football books I've read. So, I mean, for those of you who haven't read it, you should go out and buy the book and read it immediately because it's amazing. And it really goes over, you know, a time in Naples that was really feverish, and it's one of those once in a lifetime or once in history type of moments, you know, those little specks of time that really captures a city in a great way. So I mean, John, I'll start it with some easy ones. You know, how did you get involved with wanting to cover Maradona and his time in Naples?
Like, it goes back really to when I was a kid. I did a lot of traveling in the late 80s, and I found myself in Naples in 1990, just as Napoli were going for the second title. So I actually got caught up in it, you know, the Maradona madness. I'd been there six years by then. But they'd won the first title a few years before. But it was just, I was in the stadium when they played Lazio and they wrapped the title up. And it's just something that always stayed with me. And right. years later, when all the travelling finished and life settled down, and like you do, the fun ends, you get married and all this business. I was on honeymoon in Sorrento, 90s, I can't remember when I got married now, 96. And I remember seeing a picture of Napoli on the wall, and he cut Maradona out of the photo. And that always stuck with me. And I remember going into a side shop, and I said to this old guy who was in there, when you go in Sorrento, there's all these little shopping alleys and all these little fellas sat in shops waiting. And I just pointed to the poster to him. I said, why? And he just said to me, Maradona, great player, bad man. And that just stuck with me all the time. And it's just, and just over the years, when I started writing, not as much full time, but I just thought Maradona was just such a perfect subject to write about, because the story in Naples, it just had a concoction of characters and that I just loved to write about. I mean, you had the gangsters, you had the football, you had the Camorra, you had Naples. I mean, what a background. And then you have the greatest player the world's ever seen landing there. And he was like, I mean, he was an angel on a football pitch, but off it, you know, he just lived by different rules. And he just landed in a city. I mean, it was just like, imperfect time. The timing was perfect, but for them two to come together, it was just like oil and fire. You know, Maradona, Napoli, the city, the era, and just them 7 years for me, it was just perfect. It was just perfect to write about because it had everything.
Yeah, it really was sort of a perfect storm of circumstances.
And it was just, he just landed there when Napoli was on the verge of being well, he wasn't on the verge of being relegated. They'd had a bad season. And Foligno, it had got to the point where the fans had lost, he'd lost it with him. I mean, to the extent they blew his car up. He wasn't in it at the time, right? But it was a warning. Sure. And it was getting to the stage where Maradona, they've been chasing Maradona for years on and off, going back to when he was still in Argentina. They sent him a Napoli shirt, but he had no idea who they were, you know, at the time. But with everything that was going on at Barcelona, the opportunity arose for him to sign him. And, I mean, the transfer, Ken, Raph, is a story in itself. You know, is a book in itself, what went on there. But they got him. You know, they got him. It was just... And he landed there in 84, wasn't it? 84.
Yep.
80,000 people there waiting for him. Oh, well, it varies. Depends who you listen to at San Paolo. Some say it was 65, 75. You know, it's just there. And that was just to see him unveiled. I mean, the passion, everything about that place was just, the passion, the football. The Neapolitans had like this thing where they lived the life for the day because they had the Vesuvius looming over them that could go off at any time. So what was the point of worrying? So that's how they lived the life. And Diego was the same. You know, he just didn't care. He played his football. He'd been a god to people since he was 10 years old. So different rules applied.
It's just so fascinating how, excuse me, it's just so fascinating how a person who doesn't know much about, you know, a place, you know, in Naples or even the team ends up getting there and becoming like their son, you know, and it's just it's such a perfect fit with him and his lifestyle and his, you know, way of thinking. You know, it's pretty incredible to think that he didn't know much about the place before, and where he ended up signing would be home for him.
He lived in a bubble. He had no idea. He lived in a bubble. He only got told what he wanted to hear. I mean, obviously he knew about Barcelona, but Barcelona was with his posse that landed there was possibly one of the worst cities for him to go to. I mean, a great football club, but the city itself, it just wasn't set up for the kind of people that landed with him and his lifestyle. I mean, they put him in a place called Pedrales, which is like one of the poshest places in Barcelona. And him and his family and his friends and his fixers and God knows who else was with him, they turned it into the Wild West. And for the Catalans, it was like notoriously conservative and they saw what they considered this. I mean, it was a bad name. They called like Sadaka, they called him. It was like a bad name for a dark-skinned South American kid. They just looked down on him.
Right.
But the president, he had to, like, check it on the chin because they knew they'd sign, like, the devil in disguise, but he was also the world's best player, even though he was only a kid. Right. So they could put up with it for so long until everything just got totally out of control. And then that's when the idea came to shift him on. Before he caused them too much trouble.
Right.
I mean, he kicked it off. Sorry, go on there.
No, I was going to say, I know you sort of teased a little bit about the transfer, but I think it's at least a part of that story is worth telling. So if you want to dive a little bit into that, into the story of the transfer from Barcelona to Naples or to Napoli, that would be great.
Well, the thing with the transfer was like Barcelona set a price. Foligno met it. He used every penny what he had. He went to the banks and they closed on him. And in the end, he just about made it up. And then right at the last minute, the deal was done. They were celebrating. They were announcing on Naples television, Italian television, that the deal was done. Maradona was coming. And Barca went for broke. They asked for more money. And Foligno, he didn't have it. He just didn't have it. So the only way they could make up the money was like, I mean, the main rumour is that the Camorra put up the extra. And that's what got him to Naples. I mean, there was legendary stories about people lining up to give, like, every in the Fajera and some the Spanish squad, some of the poorest parts of Naples, to just hand over whatever they had. And they come over and were collecting it, and it all went towards the fee. Whether it all went towards the fee, I don't know, but that day with the stories that the Camorra actually made up the extra bit. So it was like when Manadora did arrive in Naples, they felt like they owned part of him anyway.
Of course. Yeah. And that, I think that that sort of, you know, goes into sort of the, a little bit of the life that he ended up leading while he was down there. I think part of that, you know, we've sort of helped fund this.
Yeah. There was so much intrigue in the transfer role as well, Ken. It's like Napoli had already put the names forward of the players that was going to be playing that season. They went into a bank vault in Rome at the Players Association, and Diego's name wasn't on it. So obviously he wasn't going to be able to play. And then mysteriously overnight, before the deal was done, his name appeared on it the next day. And to this day, no one really knows how they done it. I mean, there was rumours that Fellaini went himself, and that one of the security guards was had Neapolitan leanings, and he let him through, and he just signed his, put Maradona's name on the papers.
On the roster.
Yeah. These are the stories. I mean, they sound crazy, but you speak to so many people. This is how they operated. Nothing was impossible.
I think it's fair to say that, you know, financial fair play was not really a thing then, you know. So none of this. No.
When you're blowing presidents' cars up, and it sets on a different level, they were gonna get Maradona by hook and by crook. But the thing was, Diego as well, he got himself into so much debt, or his manager had got himself into so much debt in Barcelona. He needed the move. He needed the money. Because there was rumours that there was drug dealers to pay off in Barcelona. There was all kinds of stuff that was going on. He had to get out of Catalonia. And the city that put the money forward was Naples.
Yeah, it's just such an unbelievable story. Everything about, you know, not just the player, and obviously all of us Napoli fans hold those years that he was with us in, you know, that ridiculously high regard, and all the, you know, the trophies he brought us, and, you know, having that sort of claim, that little feather in your cap that, you know, arguably the best player that ever played the game, you know, played for your team, and, you know, you can just wear that badge of honor. And I know, I mean, I could speak for myself, and, you know, when I started really cranking up my interest in Napoli and really sort of retracing my roots a little bit, you know, you just learn to puff out your chest a little bit. And no matter how damaged the man is or how bad the man is, you still find yourself defending him a little bit because of how proud you are of what he did when he was there. So it's really quite, you know, it really is something out of a fiction book that you're able to capture that was real life.
For me, lads, it's the greatest. Them 7 years are the greatest. It's the greatest football story ever, because it just has absolutely everything. Sorry, lads. Go on.
Oh no, that's okay. And you know, I'm just to be, you know, like say you're speaking to a you know, a neutral football fan who might not know too much, or maybe a brand new football fan. Or a casual fan, and, you know, they ask what team you support, and you say Napoli, and they might not know too much about Napoli, you know, modern day, but then when you say, oh, the team Diego Maradona played for, they're like, oh, I get it. Yeah, okay, Diego Maradona, yeah. I know him, you know.
Together, don't they? But you say Napoli, and immediately people think Maradona.
Yeah.
It's one of them. It just goes together. It's like, for most people, I mean, not for all the Neapolitans, and Napoli started when Maradona walked into that stadium back in 1984. That's the birth of the modern day Napoli.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, we all see the photos. I mean, and you know, those are just some iconic photos for us. You know, him coming out of the tunnel, and you know, that iconic shot of him getting that first look at the San Paolo, and everybody, and you know, people standing room only, pushing up, you know, filling that stadium up just to greet the player is one of those things that you cherish, and you look at and you're like, you know, these things don't happen like they used to. You know, they don't happen like that anymore. There's not these, you know.
It's like a bitter and twisted fairy tale. Because when you think 10 years later, they were shooting the gates on the San Paolo, Napoli had gone.
Yep.
You know, yep. After Maradona was gone, it was just like a slow a thousand cuts.
Yeah.
And then they come back as another team, and then they're back again. But it was just he was right at the start of it, and it was just astonishing what he did. I mean, when he first arrived, I mean, there was more hitmen in that Serie A league than what you find in a Sergio Leone movie. They were lining up. Every team had a hatchet man. You know, he used to play like double shin pads on, and he also had the injury from Barcelona when the butcher Goycochea got him. That almost finished his career on his ankle. Yeah. Had a steel plate put through his ankle. In fact, I got told that that's where the cocaine came from, because the pain was that bad in the recovery initially where it began.
Yeah, it's
then in Naples it was like, you know, it was everywhere.
Yeah, it's
Paul Martin, a good mate of mine, Paul, who was the producer on the film, the Diego Maradona film, when we was initially selling the book, every time he kicked the door in to see someone, it was put the book on the desk, Scarface in football boots.
I mean, that really would be how you'd sell it to someone who wants to either, you know, sign a book deal or a movie deal or any of those things, right? You know, what's going to be our punchline here? And you sort of say, you know, this is the football version of Scarface.
Football boots, and it was just, for me, it's one of the best things I've ever said about it, because it just sums it up. You know, you look at the stories, the outrageous stories, some of the stuff that I couldn't even put in a book, lads, because I just couldn't, you know, I thought, I won't get away with that one. I've got away with enough. But the thing with the cocaine one, about where he had to be clean from Wednesday to be ready for the game, and never being drug tested in Naples, and when he did, it was always somebody else's urine.
Sure.
You know, on the test. And then the one time they got it wrong, the test went back to Rome and it come back to Naples that Diego was pregnant. He'd only messed up a lady was going to give it forward, and Diego was going to have a baby. But the typical Neapolitans, they sorted that out. You know, they got around that. While he was doing it on the pitch and winning them titles and scoring outrageous, beautiful goals, he was untouchable. You know, it was only years later when the cocaine really took hold and the magic faded. And
sure. Yeah. I mean, I think we all, I know as a kid, you know, I have that, you know, I think the first World Cup I really remember as a kid was 94. And we all know that, you know, that was sort of really the end of the line for Diego. It was sad.
It's that famous picture, isn't it, where he scored the goal? I think, is it against Greece?
Yeah,
it was against Greece. Yeah.
And everyone's just like, you could hear the whole world saying, what is he on?
Yep. Yeah. Yep. That was, just, you know, he scores a goal and he really just sort of puts the, you know, the writing on the wall right after he scores. And it was, you know, I mean, one of those things that everybody knew what was going on, but at that moment, everyone was just like, all right, this is.
You know what, though, Ken? It makes you wonder how many other players was on. I mean, Diego was staying for 30 years that FIFA, to quote a better word, was corrupt.
Sure.
And he went to war with him, didn't he? He went to absolute war with him. And it's funny how he was the only one who was ever caught.
Yeah, a little bit of, you know.
Conspiracy theory, yeah.
A little bit of finding your man a little bit.
Yeah, but, same like what happened in Napoli. I also thought it was a bit ironic that. Manchi, yeah. I'm biased.
Well, you know, one of the things we wanted to talk about, and you know, you sort of talked about it a little bit, and it being a fairy tale and being like a movie, you know, the great part about that is, you know, it is a movie now. Capadia is, you know, for those of you who don't know, he's an amazing director. He's done a couple of other amazing documentaries, which I'll leave links to, you know, Senna and Amy Winehouse.
He won the Oscar for Amy Winehouse.
Yeah, I mean, me and my fiance watched the Winehouse one recently, and it's It's amazing. It's heavy, and it's, you know, at the end, it's tragic, but it's amazing.
Very similar to Diego. Did you notice, Ken, the way he cuts it?
Yeah.
Every bang, bang, bang in it. It's brilliant.
So, you know, I guess our first real question is, you know, what was that first? How did Capadia reach out to you, or did he immediately, or did he reach out to you after the fact? You know, about wanting to adapt your book into a movie, into a documentary.
Well, are you sitting comfortably, lads? It's a long story. This the book was originally written in 2005, and 6 months after the book was published, the publisher went bust. And it was 2000. All the books, I never seen a penny. All the books just paid off, were sent to an auction, and they were bought up and just went around the world. I never seen them. They just disappeared. But I always kept the author's rights to the book, even though I didn't have any books. The books just went worldwide. So over the years, I just carried on working. But because my email was in the book, I started getting emails of people who'd read the book and how much they was enjoying it. And like, I'd get some crazy stuff. Like, there was a Palestinian police officer who's been shelled by the Israelis in 2008, 2009 in the Intifada. And he's reading the book on the West Bank while he's being shelled. And it was just, crazy stories like that from an English doctor in the Congo who was in the middle of a civil war. He was also reading the book. And these stories just kept, they kept coming, and I'm thinking, oh, listen, I can't do anything about it. You know, the book was just out there, but I still retained the author's rights. And then around 2011, 2012, I get a phone call off the producer, Paul Martin, who's a good mate of mine now. And he bought the book in Los Angeles Airport. Now, how the hell it ever got to Los Angeles Airport, I have no idea. But that's where he picked it up. And he, at the time, Paul was into sporting documentaries. That was his job. And he says, I'd really like to talk to you and see if we can do anything with this. Now, at that time, it had just been out there for like 6 years. So I just said to Paul, I said, you just go with it, mate. You see what you can do with it. Anything you can do is a bonus. So Paul did, and he knocked on so many doors, and he met all the top people in the States as well as in Europe, England. And no one ever said no. It was just bad timing. And then in early 2016, I think Capadia was just coming off Senna. And Paul got a meeting with him, and he spoke about the book, and, you know, he said he'd come back to him, and he did. And, you know, they said they'd go with it. So I signed the book over in 2016. And then after that, it also, the unearthed, it's easy for an American to say, 500 hours of unseen footage, Maradona footage, what no one had ever seen, which was basically just two cameramen hired by Diego's agent to follow him round when he was in Barcelona, in Naples, basically just following him round off the pitch. And he was always pitch side when the games was on, so they always had different angles of the games. He just followed Diego. And so he had 500 hours of his footage, and he had the book. And then he just disappeared. Obviously, they do what they do. They got it all together. I heard nothing for a while. And the next minute, you start hearing he disappeared to edit it all together, Capadia, and he's come up with this. So it's basically, the book was born in 2005, and it's now unearthed into the film in 2019. It's older than my kids.
Yeah.
It just keeps going. I was contacted a couple of weeks ago. I mean, it's been published in Spanish. Oh, sorry, it's been published in Italian and Spanish. And the updated version looks like it's going to be It's going to be published again in Italian. So it just keeps going.
There's some parallels here I'm seeing from 2005 until 2019 with, you know, sort of like the... your book coming out and sort of disappearing and then finding its way, you know, back out into prominence. It really, in an eerie way, kind of parallels what happened with Napoli around 2005 and their sort of slow rise back up to, you know, to prominence in Italy. It's a really, you know, as I'm sitting here listening, and the timeline is coming together. It's just one of those things.
It's unearing. It really is. It's unearing. It's weird. Because it was like a slow death with the book. Because the book never went... It never went away, but he never did anything. You know what I mean? It's like... And Naples, meanwhile, they slipped, you know, as far as he could possibly go. And then, like, this they started coming back, didn't he? Before Sarri, was it... Who's the other chap who was managing him?
They had Benitez and they had Mazzari previously to
Sarri. Yeah, there was a couple before where you could see that Naples, something was happening.
Yeah.
You know, he was on the way back. I mean, last season, when they won 1-0, the year before they won 1-0 in Juventus, and Kubali got that ball and Naples just exploded.
Oh, yeah.
I thought, man, there's going to be another chapter here. You know, it's just stunning.
Very close to another chapter, but you know, I actually got that
in the extended version. I mentioned that in the extended version because I mean, I'm a Manchester United fan, but when Kubali got that goal, my god,
yeah, I think all of us Napoli fans in that moment probably blacked out for a quick second. when that ball went in, you know, I think it's one of those moments that even just talking about it now, the hairs on my arms. And on the back of my neck stand up because it's just one of those moments, regardless of the rest of the season, how the rest of the season panned out, that will just live like a flash in your memory for the rest of your life. You know, you just remember him towering above those Juventus defenders and that ball going in, and you know,
it's Juventus, isn't it? Yeah. Last gen up against 11 players.
Sure is. You
know, it's the world's greatest gold watches and God knows what else. Allegedly.
John, I always found it pretty coincidental that the book came out in 05, and you know, as Ken said earlier, Napoli were going through, you know, the bankruptcy and trying to reemerge, and that was also the same year Diego Maradona returned to Naples since his since his banishment. I always kind of find that found that ironic and symbolic. How do you feel about that? Were you aware of his return to Naples when the book came out, or like around when the book was coming out?
When I started anything, I become all obsessed. Rafi, it takes over. You know what I mean? It's just all consuming. So by 2005, 10 years, the internet was going, but the stuff on Naples wasn't as wide as what it is now. You know, there was stuff on there. I mean, today you can watch every game Maradona played for them 7 years. But in 2000, right. like Wikipedia says in the movie, Maradona, there was 80,000 people there to greet him. Not Wikipedia, I think it was Daniel Arcucci says in the movie, there was 80,000. To greet him, and then when he left, it was like a thief in the night. He was on his own, and then he, like, that was 91. Then was it 14 years later, 2005? He goes back for Ciro Ferraro's testimonial,
right?
And he couldn't play because he'd had an operation. But and the stories was that he was nervous because he had no idea what kind, because it was his first time, he had no idea what kind of reception he was going to get. And when he landed in Naples, the place just went absolutely crazy. There was thousands at the airport. They followed him back into the city. And that night at the San Paolo, it was just like, I mean, I do a chapter on it in a book, just call it Return of the King. Because it was like, it's just like a love affair rekindled. You know, they'd gone through, they fell in love. Then it was the ultimate breakup. And then you actually get an happy ending, which... Diego's died twice, so how many happy endings are you going to get? the 2005 was just like, for me, it was just like a perfect end to the story. You know, when he goes back and that stadium and they're just going absolutely crazy. Because Diego was more Neapolitan than Neapolitans. Like we were saying before, he just landed in the right city. It was, you know,
it was destiny, you know.
It was destiny. I mean, like, they have this San Gennaro, patron saint of Naples. They have this thing with, I mean, originally it was beheaded by the Romans, but the near, this is going back a few years. This is in the book as well. This is how much of a bloody epic it got. I'll go on about it. And it was beheaded but the Neapolitans, after it was done, they took away some of his blood. And every year in Naples, they have they say that the blood still comes alive. And the years when it doesn't, disaster will strike Naples. Well, one of them very few years it doesn't, or so they claim, come back alive. And one of the few years it doesn't was when Vesuvius went up again in 1944, and there was a massive earthquake in the south. I think it was 1882. And I think the other time where it never, very few times it didn't work, was when Maradona left in 1991. So they're very superstitious people, you know.
That,
you
know, oh, yeah.
We know all about that. We definitely know all about that.
But you must be, I mean, they reckon in every Naples house while he was there, there was a picture of the Virgin Mary, San Gennaro, and Diego. You know, Diego was probably on top of them.
Probably. I mean, for anyone who's listening who has not been to Naples, and you know, just in case you're thinking we might be, you know, drumming this up a little bit for the drama, there are so many tokens of Maradona's time there, and the way that he's remembered is really like a deity. And when we, you know, when we put the D10S to Dios thing up, it really is like that in the city. And I have a miniature version of this sign in my house.
It's actually really further where Diego was concerned. You walk through the facade of the Spanish Quarter, a lot of these places, every alleyway, back alleyway, you'll see a tiny little altar, and Diego will be in there somewhere. You know, you go in any little corner shop, you'll see a picture of Diego. They've got Diego, the second they got Diego's tears, a piece of his shirt. You know, it was that kind of thing, because he was, for them, he was a living god. I mean, he's a god with a crown of thorns for what he got up to off the pitch. But on it, I mean, for decades, they've been hammered by the South with Juventus, the Milan clubs, you know, and they used to taunt the Neapolitans. They used to call Naples like they call it. The last city before Africa. It was a racist thing.
Yeah.
He had going on with Naples, and he had all the banners, you know, ban nuclear testing in the Pacific, hold it in Naples, and Livenza have a wash, the famous one in Verona.
Yeah.
And all this, when Maradona come, they just threw everything. I mean, they were no shrinking violets. I mean, the Neapolitans had it back like you wouldn't believe, and whatever they travelled north. It was like Spartacus on the move, you know. It was just absolute World War III. But Diego gave him the pride back. You know, he done. He was doing it on the pitch. I mean, they were doing it off the pitch and with the banners, but he actually gave him the pride back on the pitch. And then when they won the title in '87, the place just went crazy.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's just one of those. I mean, the more we talk about it, the, you know, and the more that, you know, this just, we continue to just hear the stories, and it's just, you know, it's just one of those things that just a blip in the history that, you know, you couldn't even write it, you know, as a story. It just had to be real to be real.
Like I was saying before, lads, it just had its place in time. It was like, right, you're going to get these 7 years and you're going to put as much as you can into it because it's never going to happen again. And they did. Diego came back from the World Cup in 86, the greatest player officially on the planet. And the year after, he won the title with Napoli. And is it the 10th of May, 1987? He played Fiorentina. They needed a point. And they got a 1-1 draw, and the celebration started, and they went on for 3 months. Like, they nearly blew themselves up, you know, with the fireworks. And they had this, the Neapolitans had this fascination for fireworks, and a lot of them that go up never come down. You know, they're homemade, and they used to watch them in Capri, and they were literally scared. That's all they thought, that lot are done for. They're going to do themselves some serious damage. I mean, and at night, what they did, they had these coffins. And they decorated them in Milanese colours, Juventus colours, and they took them down to the bay, and they just put them out on the Tyrrhenian Sea, and they set them alight, and they just drifted off. So you can imagine that in the Bay of Naples, these coffins drifting out, all the fireworks going off, and like a party for the end of the world.
Yeah. You know, I was 4 years old when that happened, and that's something that I, even at four, I don't think I'll ever forget. Watching on Italian news in New York, you know, the little bit that we got, but it was that was the most amazing, you know, memory of my childhood. Very, very like muffled, but you know, I remember that.
Absolutely. I mean, they was, Napoli had gone close in the '70s and the '60s, and there was always something.
Exactly right.
It was always a bad decision. It was always something that stunk the place out, and they could never just get over the line. And the clubs that Agnelli at Juventus and Milan, and this was before Berlusconi coming a couple 2 years later, but they were shuddering. They knew that if Napoli won that title, it'd set some grabbing back, because it was like when United first won it. You know, they was on the rise. Like City, once you get the first title, the second one, you know, you're off and running. And it was the same. It was the same with Napoli. They were dreading winning the first, and then they did. And they should have won it the second year. I mean, what?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I don't know whether you can talk about that, but it's another that was a scandal. There's a book in that second year, what went on. It's actually in the book, but, you know, they were 7 points clear. Was it was six games to go or something?
Yeah, it was something like that, yeah.
And the Camorra took thousands, they took millions on him to retain the title. And all of a sudden, he just collapsed. This was Berlusconi had arrived by this time in Milan. So he had his Dutch trio. He had Rijkaard, Van Basten.
Yeah, what a time for Serie A on the side, little, just a small sidebar. The quality of players you had, you know, is just unbelievable in the late, you know, mid to late 80s.
Zico at Udinese.
Yes.
Graeme Souness, Liam Brady at Sampdoria, the greatest. It was the greatest league in the world. And I think when you look back now, it's probably was for them 10 years the greatest players they played in that league. They're some of the greatest players of all time, because the Italians are. I mean, players like Tardelli, Paolo Rossi, Baresi, Scirea. Most of these played for Juventus, didn't they? Really, but
yeah.
Platini, you know, unfortunately.
Yeah, but that Milanese team when they arrived, I mean, they murdered Napoli 4-1. I think it was just after Christmas, and that was like they put a marker down. But Napoli was still going well, but then this collapse happened, and then Milan came to Naples towards the end of the season, and it was billed as like a season decider, and Naples. Milan won 3-2, but it was a strange atmosphere in Naples that day. And there was really only Maradona who looked like he was really putting it in. And that following summer, there was 6 or 7 of that team was sold.
Yeah.
I mean, there was all kinds of rumours flying around. I mean, there were stories about players being threatened that the families would be, family members would be dug up from the grave if they didn't throw the game, and cars were set alight and houses were burgled. Someone had painted on a church in the chair Sacro, Napoli Sacro was basically Naples sacred, but it wasn't sacred. They'd been got at, but they had no choice. You know, that was Italian football in the day. It didn't just go on in Naples, it went all over the place.
Sure.
It's been proven since, hasn't it?
Yeah, sure has. sure has. You know, we talk about that 05 to 06 era, you know, all this rebirth and stuff. And there was, we could have a whole show just on, you know, those seasons and, you know, sort of the fallout after that. I mean, it's
the Moji years.
Yes, that's right. The Moji years. So just talking about the film a little more, you know, over here in the States, we actually don't have it yet. But I know we're getting it in September. So for anybody who in the States that's listening to the show and you want to be able to watch the Diego film, I believe HBO has picked it up and it's coming out in September.
September, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, great. So, you know, we'll obviously be, I think the tentative plan is for when it does come out, is we're going to do a podcast sort of review on it when it comes out in the States. So, and I know one of our friends who submitted a question today is in the UK and already saw it, and he absolutely loved it. So,
but, you're going to love it.
I can't wait. I know personally, I can't wait. So, but talking about the movie, was there any involvement or talks with you and Capadia as the movie started to get edited and brought together, or?
No, not at all. No, it was a different entity whatsoever. It's like, I'm in the credits for the film.
Sure.
But he's just one of the great directors.
He sure is, so, yeah.
Not going to ask me anything. He produced it. I think it's a masterpiece. When I wrote that book, lads, I mean, it was wrote in a sense with when I got the chance with the little ones leaving me alone. It was like I had Bocelli on in the background, I had Morricone on in the background. And I tried to write it. I don't know when you read the book, it was like a Sergio Leone epic with this kind of music in the background, like a gangster footballing epic.
Right.
And when I seen the start of the movie, I thought, my God, he's got it. You know, You see Maradona being, I don't know whether you've seen the trailer.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, oh, sure.
Yeah. It starts off at a fantastic pace, and it's just cut. It's just like, I call it a cocaine cut because it's bang, bang, bang. You know what I mean? It's what Naples was at the time. It was like, it's just absolutely stunning. He's just got it. He captures the years. Obviously, he's got all the footage to play with. But he just catches Maradona beautifully. He really does. He really does. I think anyone wants to start a project on Maradona, even if you don't know anything about him, as soon as you start to dig, well, it gets older.
Yeah.
It does become an obsession.
Yeah, it's.
Has he ever been anybody like him? I mean, he's not 60 yet. He's died twice. He's won the World Cup. He's an absolute idol to people in part the third world. It's just incredible. And he also would speak out against anybody at the time, whether it was Bush, the Vatican, anyone. Referees, FIFA.
Oh, yeah.
I used to call him like a cruise missile with words because he used to say things that no one could get away with, but he could. Until, in the end, you know, they got him. They nailed him.
Yeah.
But I also have to say he was no saint. I don't want to make him sound like he was a saint. He wasn't. You know, he was human. He was fallible. And he did pull a lot of stunts. But, you know, don't we all? No one's perfect.
No, that's, you know, that's part of just part of his story and what makes him such a intriguing and amazing person to sort of write about and read about and watch video on. And, you know, that's, you know, it's not a coincidence that, you know, there was, once you started digging, there was so much stuff to uncover. And then once, you know, Capadia got his hands on the footage, there was so much to unravel and so much to dig through that, you know, there's reasons why it's become, you know, such an amazing story, and his time in Naples has been, you know, sort of like legitimately the thing of legends. You know, people just don't. I think a lot of times.
To know what to leave out.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Can you imagine that the footage they must have had? They couldn't. Well, no, the footage they had what they couldn't show. But I mean, I'll tell you what will be worth waiting for, lads. The DVD with all the extras.
Oh, sure.
That'll be something else.
But before we move on to some listeners' questions, I just want to ask you, over all of your time covering Diego and all of, you know, the digging and the reading and the writing and the watching, you know, what is, if you have to, I'm going to put you on the spot here, just by the way. if you have to pick one Diego story to tell to someone who, you know, obviously knows about Diego but doesn't really understand the encompassment of what he was about in Naples, what's your one in the chamber so to speak?
Oh, wow. I mean, the footballing story, I'd go for the goal against Juventus where Napoli hadn't beat them in 12 years. And it was like a curse around the necks. And they played them in San Paolo. It was a rainy, muddy Sunday. And Napoli, Juventus came into Naples. Typical Juve, the old lady, you know, they strolled in. Absolutely fantastic defence, lethal up front. And Napoli, Maradona that day just led them a merry dance. And they couldn't handle him. And finally, Napoli get a free kick in the second half, indirect free kick inside the box. And I think it's about 12 yards out, so an angle. And Maradona just, it's clipped to him. I think it's Vanni who clips it to him. And he hits it like a goal shot into the top corner. I've never seen anything like it. And the stadium just goes absolutely wild. You've seen that goal, haven't you, lads? It's
one in the box, the free kick in the box, right?
That's
the one. Talking about?
Yeah.
It's a clip shot. He probably had half a yard to place that ball, and he found it 12 yards out, and he found it. And that just kind of put the curse of Juventus to rest, really, because, you know, a year later, I think they won it. But they had to beat Juventus to get there. It was a psychological, it turned into a psychological.
Of course, yeah.
And it was him who got rid of it. And from then on, it was just a matter of time, you know, before they won the title. That's the story on the pitch. Off it, I don't really know where to start.
It's funny because when Ken and I were talking about, you know, questions and preparing for our chat today, one of the things I mentioned to Kenny was maybe asking you what you thought was going through Diego's mind when he did score that goal. So I find it pretty cool that's the football story that you chose as your favorite Diego story. He just must have had the utmost confidence when he took that shot, because that's something that I don't think anyone else has ever done. You know, I mean, it's rare to see a free kick in the box now anyway, but it's just one of the most magical goals I think he's ever scored.
Yeah, and what's great about that goal is that there's an amazing – when you watch the replays of it now, there's this amazing camera view from behind the goal, and you can just see the shot go in and the stadium just almost shoot off of its moorings, you know.
I don't know whether it was the cameraman or whether the actual bloody ground was shaking. But the thing with Diego, he got it. He knew how much he bought into it. He bought into it straight away with Naples. And he loved an underdog. He adored, because where he come from, Via Ferrito, which is the back end of Buenos Aires, was the slum of all slums. And there was parts of Naples which were just as bad. And these were the supporters, and he got this. He knew how much it meant to them. So when you see celebrations on the goal, at the goal, it's like this kid could have been born in the Fischer. He could have been born in the Spanish Quarter. He could have been riding around on a moped waving a Napoli scarf. You know, he just got it. He got the passion. And the year that they actually won it, they went to Turin, and they've not won there, I think, since 1963 or something. And again, it was like, three quarters of the stadium was Neapolitans, because a lot of Neapolitans had moved north, you know, to work, because there was no work down south, to work in the Fiat factories. So come that game, like three quarters of the stadium was Napoli. This was in Turin. And it was the same old story. Maradona went there, there was Giordano, there's, I can't remember who the other guy was up front.
Carica.
Yeah.
Or not in that season, I'm sorry.
Yes.
Carnevale.
That's the guy. I think that's the one. And he battered Juve in the first half, and he went one down. And he was like, oh, no, here we go again. You know, it's the same old story. But then in the second half, if you ever get a chance to watch the game, lad, Maradona is just sensational. He just drives them on. And in the end, he battered them. They beat him 3-1. And that was it then. You know, after that, it was just a race to the line. But for Maradona, he just knew what it meant. He knew what it meant to him, the passion and the city itself.
You know, and that's something
that... I keep sound like an angel. He was no angel, but he was, for me, he's the greatest footballer on the planet. And, you know, he had a crown of thorns, but he was just a one-off.
Well, the way that he influenced Ferlaino to go and buy players that he thought he needed, that he thought would work for the team, is incredible too. Because we mentioned that Naples being such a the team itself not having as much money as they should have to be able to buy a person like a player like Diego, and then for Diego to say, after a season or two, say, I need these players, we got to go get me these players, and just the way it all lined up, because he'll always credit his teammates, he'll say that. He always loved all his teammates and just the I think just his influence was such a one of a kind influence, and Naples didn't have the money to go buy him and had to look elsewhere, possibly allegedly for fun.
If it was Diego who was buying the players, he had a good eye, because we're buying players like Fernando Romano and Banya, these were top class players. The fullback, I can't remember the names now, but these were really, really good players.
Yeah,
it wasn't just buying names, they were building a team.
Yeah, who was it that had just come from the Verona team? One of them, I forget who it was, had just come from that Verona team who won the Scudetto a couple of years prior.
Yeah, and the synergy he had with the players, that he sort of handpicked. Looking back on it, you see that attack between him and Kareka just, understood each other on the pitch. It was really beautiful to see.
It was the third. It was Giordano as well, wasn't it?
Yep.
Magic thing. The thing with Valeno, Maradona, they didn't get on. There again, they couldn't stand each other. It was lit. Valeno thought it was the devil on earth, because it was like the Barcelona situation. He could do what he wanted, and there was nothing Valeno could do about it. They couldn't control him. But again, it was the same. As long as you're doing it on the pitch, we'll put up with it. But, Fellaini at times must have just sat back and thought, what have I done? but then when you watch him play, it's a totally different... the stories that he bought the players, I was told, was true. He didn't buy the players, but he recommended him. These are the players to go for. Fellaini went from himself. He went from when he blew his car up in 19. By the time they won it, they was kissing him on both cheeks, they were putting him on the shoulder. He was Saint of Naples again. That's how it works, isn't it, in football in different ways. But Corrado Fellaini had been there since 1968, so he'd seen it all. Lived that city. There's a lot of stories about him that's, can't really go to. But when the book was published in Naples, and the lady who published it was head of English at Naples University, so she made sure that all the stuff that was in the book was a little bit dodgy, was took out for the Italian version. But at the book launch, there's a guy there called Vincenzo Cinciarci, who was one of Maradona's agents at the time, and he said about my book and me, he said, John, you should write for Disney, because none of this is true. And he's actually in the film admitting that it did go on. It is all true, So you have these people in Naples now the Friends of Diego who look after his legend, but they tend to go a bit too far. Like, he was home every night eating a pizza. Wasn't really like that.
It's funny, we've been talking about parallels and a lot of this, stuff going on with, the book coinciding with sort of the rebirth of Naples, and as we're sitting here talking about Diego and his transfer from Barcelona to Napoli, ironically and maybe cosmically, you know, Rafa and I are going to be seeing those two teams play each other in a month. So it's one of those, another one of those weird coincidences that they're both coming over to play each other. And there's just that lineage of Diego that just sort of, you know, they could probably change the name of those two friendlies to the Maradona Cup and, you know, people will love it.
The 2 years he was at Barcelona, he, apart from the injury, he was absolutely brilliant. In fact, I think he was a better player before he got that, the ankle injury. I think what he did afterwards was in spite of that ankle injury. Before, you see him in that first season at Barcelona and 79, 80, 81. The kid was just, you know, it was just incredible. I mean, he was still fantastic afterwards, but I still think that ankle injury took a lot away from him, took something away from him, you know, as good as he was. You know, that initial burst of speed, like a lightning burst of speed. Don't get me wrong, he was still fast. You know, he could still dance through raindrops. But I just think without that injury, you'd have seen an even better player.
It's crazy to think, actually, that he could have been, I mean, you know, given sort of, I feel like his lore really doesn't quite start until he, I mean, I think maybe for the general fan, his lore starts in that 86 World Cup. But, you know, for us fans, it starts, you know, when he makes that move from Spain to Napoli. And it's, you know, I mean, John, I feel like we could sit and we could do, you know, a 4 hour conversation on the phone and never get sick and tired of hearing, you know, the stories. And, you know, me and Rafa could just sit here and listen to you go on all day.
And get lost in it.
Yeah, just totally get lost in it.
I wouldn't wish that on anyone. we'll go on all day. That's the trouble.
But, you know, we did open up the, you know, the wire here for people to submit some questions. So I figure we'll just get into those. There's maybe five or six. Some of these we've covered already, but one of our good friends of the show, Frank Sidekick, he wrote in, you know, he says, the book is one of the best football books penned, so thank you. I think we all share his sentiments in that, you know, we love it. His question is, as a Napoli fan, I adore Diego, but I struggle to come to terms with him as a human being since he's done some terrible things. What do you, John, make of Maradona, the man?
At the end of the day, he's human.
Yeah.
You know, the thing is, he was made out to be something that he wasn't. I mean, he's a magnificent football player, but at the end of the day, he was human. You know, and he did make some terrible mistakes. He did do some terrible things. Well, everyone does bad things. It's like when he got the lady, Cristina Sinagra, he got pregnant and denied the child for years in Naples. And that was, that weighed heavily against him. That I think that really hurt him over the years. And Napoli, you know, they started it all out in the end. It took a long time. And all right, he did mix with gangsters, the Camorra, but it wasn't if he went out and he shot anyone.
Right.
You know what I mean? We've all been to parties where, you know, you've had dodgy characters there. And all right, he shot a journalist once, didn't he, with an air rifle, but I think we've all wanted to do that. But yeah, I think you also have to remember the pressure he used to live under. I mean, when he was in Naples, he was never, I don't think he was ever more than a yard away from a mic shoved in his face every time he went out.
Sure.
So it must be all consuming. At times, I think you have to snap. But I don't know the guy. I can't say whether he's, what can, you know, it's not down to me to judge him. But I just think it's whoever's cast the first stone and all that kind of business. You know, there's no such thing as angels.
Yeah, I think that's it. I think I agree with a lot of that. You know, it's hard, and I think it hasn't really changed in Napoli either. With sort of like high price signings or major signings, and the sort of, you know, chaos that they sort of bring in. I mean, I think when, you know, on a lesser level, obviously not on the level of Diego, but you think about a player like Cavani when he was here and after he had that huge season and the sort of fever pitch that was around him at all times. And, you know, even, you know, when when Gonzalo Higuain was here and he was setting goal records. And, you know, there's just, you know, Napoli is a city of, you know, of passion, and they just sometimes can't contain it.
It's a city of extremes. Nothing by half. I mean, for Higuain to sign for Juventus, it's like running off with your sister-in-law, isn't it? It's just something. It's just the worst place he could have gone.
And
Cavani just followed the money.
Of course, yes.
Followed the money. All players do that in the end. I mean, they're doing it today, aren't they?
Oh, they sure are.
they all go in the end. You know, you pledge, you can kiss the badge as many times as you want, can't you?
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. Let's see. Let's move on to the next question here. Don's 83 asks, should Maradona have left before his final season in Napoli, and for the sake of his family and health at the time? If he had, would his reputation have remained intact?
I think he was too far gone with the cocaine addiction at that time, lads.
Yeah.
1991, I don't think there was no way back. And also, I don't think he would have been allowed to leave. I think he was basically a prisoner in the city. He did try and leave. I mean, AC Milan, a little known fact, he spoke to Berlusconi about leaving in, I think it was 87, 88 he met him, which is in the books, all documented. But he said you'd have to leave the country. He said he wouldn't allow it. He wouldn't be allowed. But he wanted to go. He wanted to go to Milan. Because the pressure was just suffocating. There was rumours at the time with Juventus as well, but I don't even think Diego would have dropped that low.
It would have been a disaster. I think if we rewrite history and Diego goes to Juventus in, you know, 87, 88 or 88, 89, it's probably...
He had the money to take him. Diego just knew it was never going to happen. He wouldn't be allowed to happen. I mean, he tried to get to Marseille. The deal was done and dusted, and then that was Guy Boston. As long as he was doing it on the pitch, lads, he was never getting out of there. But as soon as the magic faded, it's like a magician, isn't it? When the rabbits won't jump out of an hat anymore.
Yeah.
You know, what's he doing on the stage? You might as well just, he got rid of him.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to wonder if he would have stayed longer anyway. I mean, you mentioned the magic fading. It seemed like it was fading that season. I think he'd only had one goal at that point. Or maybe it was a couple of goals, but I think they were all like penalties, and Napoli were not doing that well when he was caught. You know, I think they finished.
Well, and he looked a shadow of himself as well, didn't he? He looked a real. I mean, the 1990 World Cup when he led Argentina to the final and knocked the Italians out in Naples and told the Neapolitans to support him. You know, it was just like, what else do you want to do, Diego, to make the Italians hate you anymore? He knocks them out in the semi-final, and then they get to the final against Germany, the Argentinians, and then it was in Rome once at the final. All the Italians are booing the Argentine national anthem, and he's caught on camera mouthing, "Your sons are bitches." and he was gone. He was gone, wasn't he, the season following.
It was really that's the
time. It was a slippery slope after the 1990 money.
Yeah.
What he did with the semi-final. Again, only Diego could do that. Only Diego could cause that much trouble telling an Italian city to support him against the Italians. And the story was, you know, that there was some of the hardcore did. Not a lot, but there was definitely the Italian manager at the time, I think it was Vecchini, said there was a strange atmosphere in the San Paolo that night. And they always said that it should have been played in Rome or Milan. When it was originally scheduled for Naples and they thought of the nightmare scenario, it was like, oh no. That's what came to pass.
Yeah, it was. I feel like that's really, you know, in a perfect world, which this isn't, that 90 World Cup is sort of like the bookend, you know, sort of as it goes. I mean, I know, you know, he didn't leave for until a little bit later than that, but you know, that really seemed like that was sort of the beginning of the end of the magic, as you've been, you know, alluding to.
Yeah, I think so too.
Still way back from there, could you, lads? I mean, the stick that he got the following season at away games, it was always bad, but after he knocked the Italians out in their own World Cup, where they were the best team in it, and they should have won it that year. And it was his penalty that put them away, that put them out, broke their hearts. And the next season, he's turning up in their ground in a Napoli shirt. You know, it's just a matter of time. And even in Naples, they knew by then, Fellaini knew he was a busted flush, and thus the failed drug test.
Yeah.
Time ever when he failed.
All right, John, moving on to the next question. At Josh.1994 asks, do you think Maradona in Naples, like, do you think Napoli would win the title if Maradona was in today's team?
Do you know what? I think they've got a good chance next season without Maradona.
Yeah.
Sorry, Juventus, I think that is such a bad fit. I really don't think that's going to work out. And I think Ancelotti, he's had a good look at this team now. He's had a good look. And I think he'll buy the right players. And I think Napoli will go really close. Now, if they keep all the Kubilai and sign who it looks like, you know, just get a few more players in, I think they're good enough to win it.
Yeah, I think we, a lot of us share that sentiment this season.
You're still up against that big black dog, aren't you? You don't know what they're going to pull out. But I just think Sarri going to Juventus is not a good move. I have no idea why he's done it, apart from the money.
Yeah, we were pretty torn about whether he should come in or not to our team. Knowing that it's either Napoli or Juventus that he was going to, we were like, oh, you know, it might be a good thing that he comes to us because he's very talented. But at the same time, who wants the circus that is, you know, that is Icardi? But then you don't want Juventus to get him because for the same reason. But then you do want to get him because of the same reason. Oh,
it's devil in the deep blue sea, isn't it? You don't know what's best. But the question about Maradona, if he was in this Napoli team, my God, they'd win it.
I think so.
Oh, God, yeah.
That'd be fun to watch a Maradona-Ronaldo.
Maradona versus Ronaldo, yeah.
Wouldn't that be fun?
Yeah. We can Fanta Calcio it all day, you know. Maradona with Insigne and all this beautiful, you know, sort of fantasizing of bringing back that 86 reincarnation of Maradona and bring him in, see if he would put us over the edge.
I mean, Maradona now, it'd be like playing on Sevilla pitches, wouldn't it, for him? Can you imagine an 86 Maradona on these, playing at the New Comp today, tearing teams apart?
Yeah. You know, I mean,
what it'd be like off the pitch, I'm not sure, because he's still likely to be with the same crazy madness around him. But I just think you put him in any top Italian side, any top Spanish team, I think he'd be the difference.
Yeah, I think
even
so.
In England, you put him in a team like Tottenham, not Arsenal. Well, he wasn't that good. Maybe Man United. You know, you just don't. You've got levels of players. For me, you've got Ronaldo, you've got Messi, you've got Pele, you've got Cruyff. They are truly all-time greats. But for me, I know I'm terribly biased, but I think Diego is just a tiny one step up. You know, I don't think you could put a pin between the others. And I don't think you should, because I hate comparisons. I mean, how can you compare Messi and Maradona? I mean, so having both coming at you is one, it's just right. It's a frightening thought, isn't it?
Really is. I mean, yeah, you know, in the modern day, this is everything is about who's better than who and the comparisons and all the rest of it. And, you know, I always tell the...
Somewhere, we've been blessed having Ronaldo and Messi.
Exactly. I was just going to say the same thing. You know, what generation can you get two players like that to watch at the same time? And the great thing about watching those two players is how starkly different they are and the way that they play the game. And, you know, that we're able to watch two players like that at the same time is pretty awesome. So
they've got a passion, don't they? There's a passion, and they've got all the talent in the world, but they'd love to play the game as well. I can imagine Messi, if he was a Sunday playing in a Sunday league team in a pub on a Sunday morning. And he's just got that kind of thing about it. He just loves playing the game. You can just tell, put a ball at his feet. It's like giving a little kid ice cream. And Ronaldo's the same, isn't he, to a point? I know no one loves Ronaldo more than Ronaldo, but he's the ultimate showman. And he's got a passion for the game he wants to win. And when you've got the two of the greatest players having that kind of makeup, you know, it's just, I think it's a special time. We're going to miss them when they're gone because I can't see anybody coming through this.
Yeah, that's on the same level. I agree. I was thinking about this maybe a couple months ago. I was talking to one of my friends and we were talking about it. And I said, I just don't see that next player yet. You know, I don't see that, you know, there's obviously great young players and players who will end up, you know, becoming something great. But I think that, you know, nowadays you see too many players moving around too much and they can never really establish that root base. You know, you see Messi's spent his whole career at Barcelona, and we know Ronaldo has played for four teams in his career, but he spent a fair amount of time at a bunch. I mean, the time he spent at Real Madrid was obviously for the beef of his career. So, you know, it's you know, a lot of players moving around and a lot of egos and chasing the dollars or the euros or the pounds or whatever it is. And it just changes the game a little bit.
I think, lads, the way the world's gone, not getting political, but because there's such a shift of people now moving around, I think somewhere in the back streets, it could be Rome, it could be a kid who's come from Africa, it could be a kid from Syria, Palestine, who's playing in the back streets of Paris. There'll be some kid somewhere who's going to come along who's going to have the same kind of magic, but I think it'll be something. There'll be somebody out there, they just don't think they've shown themselves yet. There'll be some 14, 15-year-old kid who'll be trying to keep the lid on.
And we might not see him for another 10 years either, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, I mean, how long did we wait for Messi and Ronaldo?
Yeah, I mean, there was a fair gap there. You know, I feel like there was a fair gap between, like, players, these world-class players.
We had Ronaldo, didn't we? We had the Brazilian Ronaldo. Zidane's another one you could put up there who were great players. But not, I think, when you're looking at to the extent of Maradona and Messi, the modern-day Ronaldo. Well, there'll be some kid out there keeping a ball up now, driving his mum mad. Outside.
Well, he won't be from the States, that's for sure.
Well, you never know. This is it, you just never know. You know, some little Mexican kid in Los Angeles has got past Donald without him looking. There'll be there'll be someone out there ready to take the mantle. But they're going to have to be pretty special to be better than these two, though, in Diego.
That's for certain. Moving on to our next question, P. Scala 11. Obviously, as a Napoli fan, my perspective is skewed. But would the legend of Maradona be what it is now if he never played for Napoli, or did the huge love of us fans have for him add to it? I think I know the answer to the question, but.
Like we were saying before, that he just landed in the right place at the right time. It was an imperfect storm, but it was just like, it was just a beautiful relationship, wasn't it? It just, everything just happened. They say everything happens for a reason. I'm not sure myself, to be honest with you, but it did for Diego at that time. You know, it just landed in a place that he even looked like the locals. They looked like him. The people on the streets was like the people from Buenos Aires who we grew up with. You know, and he had something to fight for as well. I mean, he was already rich. Well, he wasn't rich at the time, but he, you know, money would never be a problem for him. But they told him stories about, you know, the North and what he had to do and how much it meant for him to win that title. So he had something to aim for as well.
Yeah.
So I think could he go anywhere else from Barcelona? Yeah, but I don't think the story would have been the same.
Yeah,
in the fairy tale and the drama and the scar-facing football boots, as my mate Paul always said.
Yeah, it's you know, we talked about it a little earlier, but I think it was just destiny. It was just one of those things that was written in the stars, and it just had to be the way that it was. And I think for me, it's hard to imagine it any other way, you know. And the best part about it is when he comes in from Barcelona, you know, I think he has a pretty large chip on his shoulder to begin with, and then when he sees, you know, that passion and that drive and that sort of the way he's received in Naples, I think that, you know, as a football player, that's a lot of the motivation that you need, you know.
Yeah, and he'd always said he was looking for love too, you know.
You just hit the nail on the head there. After Fernando Signorini, his personal trainer, said Diego always plays better when he's loved, and he was adored in Naples, and that just shone through. Absolutely shone through.
I'm going to ask you one question. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Go on, mate. I'm sorry for going on.
No, because I'm going to switch it up. So if you had one more thing to add there. But all right, I'll go ahead then. Sorry. So before Kenny asks the last question, I'm gonna throw my question in, and it's from @Rafanopoli83. John, there's been recent talks about James Rodriguez coming to Naples, and a lot of speculation that number 10 will be reintroduced to the team because I think he's got some sort of a contract with Adidas to wear number 10 wherever he goes. But what are your thoughts of that? I mean, it's not really likely that a football team retires a number, but we obviously did. And what do you think about possibly bringing a number 10 back?
I think if they try to do that, he'd get lynched.
Agree.
Again, that's business over football again, isn't it? And I'd love to be there when his agent mentions that in Naples. He wants the number 10 shirt. You know, he might as well skydive into Vesuvius. I just can't see him doing it. If he did that, I think it'd be a betrayal. Because once you do that to a shirt to bring it back, I mean, James Rodriguez, let's be fair, he's a decent player. But is he good enough to do that?
Yeah.
Napoli aren't that desperate for the players, surely. I wouldn't entertain it, Ken Rafa. I wouldn't, honestly. I think it's wrong.
I also think that the assuming, I'm not going to assume, but if it did get reintroduced, the weight of expectation before he even touches the pitch, I think would crush him. That's just my opinion.
No, that's not the 80,000
waiting in the San Paolo for Jamie Rodriguez, is there?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And if he starts off bad, he starts off quiet in the first couple of games. Well, let's be honest, he's not exactly ripped it up at Bayern Munich, has he? And there's a reason he's going. He's let him back in Real Madrid. He's a good player. He's a decent player, but what, bring back Diego's shirt for Rodriguez? I don't think so.
Yeah, I think
any Napoli shirt with a number on should be good for him. He should be proud to wear it.
Agreed. Agreed. I think it's okay. No, this is great. It's one of these things that in sort of casual conversations with friends and everything else, it becomes very it becomes very heated. So
maybe the newer fans, whatever he's called, Rodriguez on FIFA and all this FIFA Pro and all this, who aren't fully aware of Maradona's what he did at Napoli. They just know it, you know, through old fogies like us. I think it could be a generation thing, but I just think it'd be crazy to even consider it.
Someone had mentioned if he wore 10, like if he brought a Scudetto and, you know, if the number 10 would help him bring the Scudetto, would I consider it then? And I had replied in saying, you know, it doesn't matter if he wears 9, 11 or any other number. If he's a quality player that's going to add to our squad, then, you know, he'll bring the Scudetto no matter what number he wears.
It's what he's got on his back.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. It's such a sacred number, too, because I remember the last time actually Napoli did actually was able to bring the number 10 out was when we were Napoli soccer, you know, those two seasons in Serie C. And Roberto Carlos Sosa, another Argentine who was a huge Maradona guy, wore a Maradona t-shirt under his jersey. But he was able to wear the number 10 because we weren't actually, you know, SSC Napoli at the time. And he scored in the last game with the number 10 that, you know, because pretty much the return of the, you know, the team that we are now was imminent for Serie B. And he just broke down in tears. You know, it's just such a special number. I don't think you should ever be touched.
We've only got to listen to Gianfranco Zola when he took over the number 10 from Maradona.
Yeah.
You listen to him whenever he talks about it, he chokes up.
Yeah.
You know, sure. I just say you shouldn't mess about with your history. The one thing you've got is your history, aren't you? And I just don't think it should be by some poxy agent who's trying to make a few quid extra with Adidas or whatever. No.
And we're not in those times where you wore a number based on your position. Because back then, you know, there were times where Maradona was on the bench wearing number 16, you know, and we're not in those times. So it's, you know, it's not that big a deal for someone to not be able to wear 10.
I think, I also think that
players are demanding that they're going to come to a club and wear number 48, don't they? I mean, it's like, it doesn't have the same kind of. Well, I just think they should leave it be.
Yeah, I think so. I think even if James does come, he won't take the 10. I just don't. I think that this is I do think that some of this is a little bit of a media drum up to just cause some drama because he did wear the 11 when he was at Bayern Munich. Granted, it was alone, but he didn't wear 10. So you know, it's good to talk about regardless.
You imagine what the Germans would have said to him if he's demanding number this and number that. He just do it on the pitch. If he comes to Naples and he does it on the pitch, he'll be a hero because he's got the talent to do it. You know, don't matter what shirt he's wearing. He puts the winner against you, scores the winner against Juventus, lads.
Yeah. You know, he could wear number 35 and it won't matter.
Don't matter.
Insigne is proud of his 24. There was brief talk about him taking the number 10. First of all, he'd never do it. And then second of all, he said that his number 24 was special to him. So
yes, for his wife or, you know, it has meaning to him. It has meaning to him.
Oh, of course it does. Of course it does. But I think what's going on there with Rodriguez, it's a financial thing, isn't it, with his agent?
Of course. Yes. Of course. 100%. I think, well, we're going to ask one more question here. At Spider Rinaldi asks, hey, John, what did you do for your research for the book? Obviously, you had many accounts and information from the time Diego was at Napoli, and much of it wasn't public knowledge. So you don't have to give us your secrets, but you can divulge a little bit.
Do you know what? Basically, I'm just an anorak. It's just another name. I'll just dig and dig and dig. And it just becomes all obsessive. If it's the internet, I used to worry about emailing people who I didn't really know, you know, to get information, and that just went out of the window over the years because the thing is now with Twitter or whatever, it just opens everything up.
Sure.
Yeah, it really does. But the original Maradona book was just a real labour of love. It was just there's a lot of the matches, there's a lot of big descriptions because I didn't really have as much information to use as I did for the. I mean, the original version was 92,000 words. The updated version, which is out now, is 134,000. So you can imagine all the extra detail and everything that's in it. But it was basically, I just used to dig and dig and just, I mean, obviously I've come unstuck with one story, like on the old Google Translate, there's an old Neapolitan president director called Emilio Anatra. I'm going back to like the 1900s. Well, when I translated the article, Anatra apparently in Italian means duck. So when I'm putting all my stuff together, I had him down in the Google Translate. I thought, that's a weird Italian name, Emilio Duck. Do you know what I mean? And it was only when the mate who's an Italian who like checked the book for me. He says, Johnny, you got a problem with this guy's name? And he says, Duck means obviously an archer. Google had missed it. So he nearly went into the book as Emilio Duck instead of Emilio Archer. You know, there's all little crazy things like that because I don't speak Italian. And at the time, a lot of it was in, you know, it was like Google translated and I'm speaking to people. But over the years, it's all become so much more available. So everything's, you know, has just been. And basically, it's just hard work and just research.
Yeah.
It's become all obsessive. And then when it's over, you just put it away. But the thing is with Diego, you can never put it away because there's always stuff going on. So there's always a bit of him there somewhere. But yeah. There will be no more updates on this, but that's it. I'm not going back to Naples anymore without
Well, I mean, John, Rafa, I mean, this has been, you know, we're about an hour and a half in, which is amazing. And I can't thank you enough, John, for the time today. It's been, I know for me, and I know for Rafa, and I know for other two co-hosts that couldn't be here, we were thrilled to have you join us.
Lots of fun. Honestly, it's been an absolute pleasure. Anytime. Been really good.
It's, you know, like I said earlier, we could talk for hours and hours and hours and just unearth stories of Maradona, and I would never get sick of it, but you know, it's one of those things where unfortunately these shows and these interviews have to come to their end. But you know, obviously I'm going to leave the link to John's book in the show notes. Once Upon a Time in Naples, I'll leave the Amazon links or, you know, however, John, if you have a preference for what link we drop in there, I'll leave it up to you. But I mean, you can always reach out to John at John Ludds on Twitter as well. I mean, he was an absolute gentleman.
The Kindle at the moment, lads, is number two. The book's number two in the charts. And I'm trying everything to get it to number one.
You heard it.
That's amazing.
My dad's not too clever at the moment. My dad's still at the moment. So I'm desperate to get it to number one. And I just can't get it over the line. So if anyone had just buy the Kindle and I'll have a drink for you in Manchester, I promise you.
You heard it.
No, I've really enjoyed coming on. It's been fantastic. It really has.
It's been an absolute pleasure. So, Napoli fans, you've been challenged by John Ludden. Buy the book on Kindle. Let's get it to number one.
Buy all a drink.
John, thank you so much for doing what you've done.
Thanks, Rafa.
He was a hero of mine, and for you to go ahead and do the work you did, you're a hero of mine too. This has been amazing. I kind of got lost in all of it.
Yeah, well, you've got my email address, mate. Anytime you want to catch up with us, you're more than welcome.
That's beautiful. Thank you so much.
I'll send you my number. And thanks for teaching us how to do Skype as well. Bloody hell.
Hey, you know, this is...
1980s, mate. 1990s.
Modern technology is here for us, you know, and we have to try to use it as best we can. So, we're happy to help. We were happy to have you on. As always, you guys can follow us at Far From Vesuvius on Twitter. And as always, we sign off. Forza Napoli.
Sempre.